Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, as always, and I hope you agree with me, I have a very interesting guest, Jane Jones, author, the book, Capitol Hell. You believe that? Oops, I said it, but it's the name of the book, Capitol Hell. The website is capitalhellbook.com. Welcome, Jane.
Thank you.
I'm so excited. You know, I have a lot of, I'm pleased to say that we're getting a growing number of people inquiring about being on the program. And when I saw your information come by my desk, Ellen Edmonds, who works in my office, our vice president of marketing, does all my guest booking. And I said, not just yes, but capital hell yes.
right on.
I love it. So tell us about your background.
Sure.
Like you'll do better justice than I will, but you've got real experience behind the scenes of what goes on in Washington.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. You know, my best friend and I, we both worked on the Hill for the U.S. Senate for many years, and after we both left the Hill, I left to go work in Minnesota politics, and she left to go to law school because there's not quite enough lawyers yet in D.C.
Of course not.
Right. So she left to go to law school. But 4 years ago, we started writing a book about our own experiences about life behind the Senate curtain, along with some stories we've embellished and some stories that we've heard from our friends who are still on the Hill. And we put it all together in a fictional tale of what life is like in a U.S. Senate office.
Well, you know, from those of us on the outside looking in, if you will, you know, we hear all these stories. And of course, everybody's watched. A lot of us have watched The American President, The West Wing, or any of these other attempts to do justice to what really happens in Washington. And I guess the first question is, does anybody get it remotely right, or is it crazier than we think?
Oh my gosh, it's crazier than you can actually believe. The best experience a young staffer will ever get, though. I teach political science at Concordia University in St. Paul, and I always tell my students, who are mostly poli-sci grads, you have two choices. You can either go be a lawyer, or you can go work on the Hill until about age 30, because that's the best experience you're going to get. You're going to learn something every single day. So it's the best experience, but some of the tasks that you're asked to do, wowza, that'll really raise an eyebrow or two.
Well, so what was your exact position when you were working for the senator?
Sure, absolutely. I was the senator's policy advisor on healthcare, education, social issues, and kids.
Oh, just that.
Just that.
Wow.
That's all it was.
Yeah, just that. And this was Norm Coleman you worked for from 2002 to 2006.
Yeah, we both actually, Alicia Long, my co-author, and I both worked for Senator Coleman, and then Alicia also worked for Senator George Allen and Senator John Thune out of South Dakota.
So do you have to be, here's a very loaded question,
yeah, yeah,
but I think people
really
like my asking this. Do you have to be just a little bit crazy to run for Senate?
You know, I'm not pretty sure if you have to be crazy to run for Senate. I think there's something in the water once you get there that might make you a little crazy.
Well, what is it that changes them? Is it the power? Is it the money? Is it the influence?
You know,
is it the lobbying?
You know, yeah, it's kind of fascinating. You know, there is an awful lot of money in lobbying, and I don't think folks actually realize the impact that, for instance, I did healthcare, like you said, for the senator. So, you know what? Every single doctor-physician group comes to meet on the Hill on their certain advocacy days. So you have the belly button doctor with the ear doctor versus the eye doctor versus the heart doctor. So you have all those different physician groups coming and lobbying for either for Medicare reimbursement or to put up the fight against the belly button doctor who goes against the heart doctor fighting. So you know what? There is so much money that actually gets poured into these special interest groups that I'm not quite sure folks realize that, you know what, as Senate staffers, that's who you're meeting with all day long.
Or the lobbyists.
From 8 o'clock in the morning till 7 o'clock at night. Not the lobbyists. It's actually the constituent groups. They're coming out from their home states. They're coming out from the Minnesotas, from the Floridas, coming out from their home states to go and then lobby for their issues. That's who they're meeting with on the Hill all day long.
Well, here's the question. Where does the money go that, to quote-unquote, all the dollars, where are the dollars going? Are they going into the pockets of the hired guns, the lobbyists who are there to try to make something happen? Where does the money go?
The money that the special interest groups go to pay for their own lobbying, any federal money actually goes to the agencies and the administration to show.
Okay, so all the money that is quote unquote, we got to get all this money out of politics, all this money out of lobbying.
Special interest groups. It's the taxi cab drivers have their special interest groups. The bankers have their special interest groups. The school teachers have their special interest groups. Everybody's got their special interest groups because they're protecting their own policy agenda.
Well, the way
those
it's
folks
the way
are
it's,
the ones that are coming to D.C.
Yeah, so the way it's spun.
A lot of money, but you can't get rid of it because it's all privately. You know, it's all the private dollars.
The way it's spun in the media is that there's all these dollars that's are bad and ugly, and they're somehow like buying votes. But that money really is just goes to pay people to do their jobs, be that a lobbyist.
Right. They are doing their job. They're out there protecting either, they're protecting law, trying to create law, or trying to make sure something doesn't happen. So, you mean, you'll never get rid of that dollar. In fact, I think it's probably going to increase.
So the money doesn't, but see, I think the perception we get in the general public is that, well, this money is going up and it's used to buy off senators or other politicians. No, it's the money goes to pay people to go and beg and plead and persuade them to vote a certain way, but it doesn't actually go to them.
Well, actually, we're going to get nitpicky here for a second. If I put my professor hat on for a second, I would tell you that those special interest groups, so the belly button doctors, they all have a political action committee usually that raises campaign dollars for their selected members. So maybe that is where they say that they buy a vote, and I'm necessarily not actually buying a
vote. We'll help get you reelected if you vote our way.
Absolutely. If you scratch my back, I'm going to scratch your back, right?
I got you. Well, there's an awful lot of back scratchers in Washington.
That's always right.
Well, for our listeners,
for
our listeners, I'm sure they're going to want to pick up your book. The book is Capitol Hell, capitalhellbook.com. Jane Jones is one of the authors, and your partner that wrote the book with you is Alicia Long?
Yes, what a great partner to have. She's excellent.
Excellent. Well, we're going to take a quick break and be right back. Stay right there.
What's your dream? Play golf every day of the week? Turn that hobby into a new career? With careful planning, you can make it happen. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your no-obligation consultation. At Holland Financial, we want to help you take the first step towards making your dreams a reality. That number again is 888-747-7526.
Welcome back. Jane Jones is on the line with us, and she wrote the book with Alicia Long. The book is called Capitol Hell. So capitalhellbook.com is the website. And she worked for Norm Coleman, as did Alicia, for 4 years and got the inside scoop on Washington. So, okay, so the obvious question we have to ask, Jane, is what's going on? Tell us what you think, because you're not there, so that's kind of convenient. What's going on right now with the fiscal cliff?
Oh, gosh. You know what? I think, here's the deal. I think any negotiation, you never show your hand too soon. I know that they think that probably Christmas Eve is probably with a drop deadline date of when they have to put a bill together and get a piece of legislation ready to go. So I don't think you're going to have any settlement on either side until the very last minute. And you know what? They always do this political circus. Everybody goes rah, 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 raises the roof until the very last second. They come to negotiations. They have it all finalized right at the drop dead deadline and life goes on. That's
okay. Your prediction, you think there'll be a deal by the by Christmas Eve?
I'm going to say Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or before.
So these guys and gals aren't going to go back to their constituents or back home to take the Christmas break with, and nor is the president want to go bask on the beach in Hawaii without a deal being done.
Well, I think it'd be a terrible place to bask on the beach in Hawaii if you didn't have a deal done.
Okay, that makes sense to me. Well, that's kind of what, you know, I think a lot of people...
Yeah, you just can't show your cards too soon. You got to do the whole fight. You got to do the political circus. And that's it. You know, it happens every single year. Look back, every single year.
Yeah.
That piece of legislation never gets done until the very last second.
And then they all want to claim victory, right?
Right. Then they're all going to stand up together. You're going to see every leader is going to be there saying, we came together, solved it. Yay!
Yeah, we did it. We worked with them. We reached across the aisle. All of the proper things, but they want to. Everybody wants all the posturing and what we're hearing in the paper, and you know they're doing this or doing that. That's all pure rhetoric. It probably has very little to do with actually what's being negotiated behind the scenes.
Right.
That makes sense. And so when they're putting these deals together, is it at the highest level? Or are they having like their representatives in some war room trying to work it out?
Oh, I definitely think it's staff-led. I think that there's the elected official conversations, and I think it's the staff that does the details.
Okay.
And then the staff tells and makes, you know, does some research for the committee chair boss or the leader chairs. It's mostly leaders at this point. And, yeah. So the staff, I mean, in D.C., it's a pretty staff-driven atmosphere. I think folks would be surprised by that. Staff doing the research, staff doing the recommendation, staff is the talking points and tells the...
figurehead what to say.
The leader what to do. Yeah.
So not only do they tell them what are the key words, but often they'll be saying, okay, you need to do this, you got to do that, because we've got to do these things.
They direct the strategy, of course.
Interesting. Did you ever see that movie American President with, what was the guy, the actor, the Gordon Gekko character?
I've seen every single political movie, so absolutely.
All right. Michael Douglas, Lisa says. Michael Douglas. Well, in that one, it was like all the staff kind of just ran the shop, and then he just did the big picture stuff.
Pretty realistic. That's pretty realistic.
Well, very interesting. If you're just joining us, Jane Jones is on the line with us. She wrote the book with Alicia Long, Capitol Hell. The website is capitalhellbook.com. Take a quick break, Jane, and we'll be right back for more information from you. Stay right there.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
And we're back with Jane Jones on the line dialing in, talking to us about Capitol Hell. That's the name of the book, capitalhellbook.com. She wrote that with Alicia Long. Jane, the other thing that is interesting to me about all of this political circus is, you know, it's going right down to the wire, and everybody's kind of saying, okay, hopefully they'll get a deal done, they'll get a deal done. And as you said, they'll kind of come out last minute and they get it done. You know, when we see all that, we kind of scratch our heads and say, is there a better way? Do you think it'll always be done this way? Or do you think there's any real hope of, you know, things being done, I guess, not so dramatically?
You know what? I think it's always going to happen this way. I think if you go back and look at the history, It's been this way since Adams was around. So I think absolutely it's going to be they're not going to change this process. This is how it is. Unfortunately, this is how it gets done. At the end of the day, it gets done.
Now you got a lot of stories with your book, Capitol Hell. I'm sure you
have.
And I'm looking
juicy and saucy.
I'm looking forward to taking a look. And I need a break and read some good something that will be interesting like that. Can you share with us something that I think maybe would surprise our listeners and hopefully soon to be readers about the book? Some of the stories. I guess maybe I'm looking for maybe a story you might tell that's an excerpt or something from the book.
Oh gosh, we have so many stories in the book of all our friends and their real life stories that happened to them from all different congressional offices. You have everything in the book from staff being asked to go and pick out the senator's wife's lingerie for an anniversary present.
Oh boy.
Doing the senator's laundry to the antics that happen in every Senate office. It's been kind of fun for us after the book was published. So many different Hill staffers have actually told us that really our characters in the book are like Stock Hill characters that you have a silver spoon press secretary in every office. You all the characters that we have are in every office. You know, there's a lot of egos that don't fit underneath that Capitol dome.
Yeah, I was going to ask. I mean, there's also the suspicion or the rumor that there's a lot of stuff that goes on in this political circus with, you mentioned the, buying lingerie is dealing with infidelity and a lot of bad behavior. Is that a fair description of what?
You know what? I'm sure it happens.
Yeah.
I never saw it.
Okay.
You know what? It's kind of fun. Our book is, people have said that our book is kind of like the Grays, you know, the Gray series right now that's out there that everybody's paging through.
Right.
We're the Grays of politics. But it's so funny about our book. No one ever has sex in our book. So I'm not quite sure why they're comparing us to the Grays book, but no one ever has sex. But you know what? I'm sure it happens. I think they have it happen in every single industry, unfortunately. But you know, I'm sure it happens in D.C. I never saw it, thankfully. So we never tiptoed in any of our characters in that in the book.
Well, that's good. That's fair, because we all hope that they're up there, you know,
working. They're working hard. They're working hard, but they have some interesting requests of you to do. And, you know, sometimes those staffers are more interesting characters than the actual senators themselves. Boy.
Oh, I'm sure. You got some, I mean, the kind of people that are up there, and they're you got a whole, I'm sure, a whole host of different folks. So you've got some strange things that they ask. What's the typical work schedule for either a senator or for somebody who's working as a staffer in their office?
You know, I'll only give you my example. I used to, like I told you what I covered earlier for the senator. It's quite a huge umbrella of issues that I covered. I would go in the office probably about 6:30 every, you know, Monday through Friday. I would start my constituent meetings from 8 o'clock in the morning until about 6 o'clock, and I met with a different group about every 15 minutes, believe it or not, throughout
Wow.
that entire day. And then at 6 o'clock, that's the only time I had to start my work. So that from 6 o'clock to about 9:30, I was paging through the information that they brought us. You know, preparing talking points, speeches, and, you know, hopefully getting some policy issues and legislation done. And then, as we say in the book, I slept with two Blackberries next to my pillow every night. And, you know, if somebody had a message that had a request for you, boy, I was able to answer that. Responsible to answer those.
Well, this sounds like it takes quite an operation for a senator. How many staff members do they have on average?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, this is kind of fascinating. I don't know if folks know this. So every Senate office gets a certain amount of money, right? So that depends. Then they control how much they can have, you know, 60 staffers or they can have 20 staffers. It depends on if the salaries are going to be larger or if they're going to put that funding to furniture or something else. But they have the range of however they spend those dollars.
So if you're talking about...
There's no magic number. I would say every office probably has about 30, I think, in D.C.
Okay. Is the budget the same for all of the senators?
No, it's based on population.
Oh, how about that? So the bigger your... Because that means you got to serve more of constituencies. That makes sense.
Right, right. And, you know, it's also kind of fascinating. So, for instance, if it was Senator Jones and I had my budget, I could say that I wanted 15 press secretaries and 2 policy advisors.
Interesting. So...
There's one senator out there that's rumored to have only, like, to have that.
Really?
Huge PR staff, public, or the press secretaries versus actually, like, just, you know, slim policy folks.
Well, what kind of money do these people make? I mean, are these high-paying jobs? Because it sounds like it's a ton of work and responsibility and stress. Do they get paid?
No, because everybody's extremely young. I think in the book, Allison, the character from South Dakota, is fresh out of college from the University of Minnesota. I think in the book she's making $22,000 a year.
Wow.
Working her tail off.
About $3.15 an hour, it sounds like. All right. Well, if you're just joining us, Jane Jones is our guest. Capitol Hell is the book, capitalhellbook.com. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Sometimes I know what I want to say, but just can't find the words.
Last week, I shouted at my grandson, and I'm not sure why.
I saw my daughter, but couldn't remember her name.
The sooner you recognize the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, the sooner you can do something about it. To learn more, go to alz.org/10signs. That's alz.org/10signs. A message from the Alzheimer's Association.
Welcome back. We have Jane Jones on the line. She wrote the book Capitol Hell, capitalhellbook.com, with Alicia Long, and from their experiences working for Norm Coleman in the U.S. Senate. So let me ask you this. This is a neat opportunity to ask the inside scoop on all this. Is every U.S. senator a potential presidential or VP candidate?
Oh, gosh. I don't think so.
No. Okay.
No, I don't think so. I think there's, you know, in the book we talk about this too. We think there's definitely the Senate flavor of the month. Where, you know what, at times, one of the senators that we both worked for was the flavor of the month. Then the next election cycle, there was a new flavor of the month.
For the different types of senators?
Yeah, but then I think when Senator Obama was a senator, he was the flavor of the month. I'm like, you know, he rose at the right time. Now I think that there's Senator Rubio is kind of the flavor of the month, kind of the catch, so to speak. I think that changes every single election season. There's somebody new, somebody fresh, somebody more exciting that, you know, people tend to say is going to be the next up and comer. But I think there's maybe a handful of folks that are looked at as, oh, they could be a possible VP candidate, a possible presidential candidate. Most of them probably are either ending their public service or they're thinking about probably running for governor.
Oh, that's interesting. So
I think that tends to be pretty frequent, actually, that they want to shift back to their home state and run for governor. So there's always that, you know, I think in their blood, they're always thinking, okay, there's always a future election out there.
I see.
So I need to watch. I need to always have, you know, be on, make sure I'm taking any vote that's safe, making sure that nothing can be construed against me, or, you know, watching your P's and Q's and crossing those T's.
What about the whole pork barrel politic thing? Where is that? Maybe that plays into what you just said, where they're, you know, as a senator, they're trying to get as much as they can for their own state, and then they can go back and be very popular, and maybe even end up running for governor of their state.
Right. I think it depends on where you're running, though, because I think there's some, you know, conservative, hard nosed states can say, you know what, we don't want you to spend any pork money.
I got you.
Other states, it's actually really important because your job is to go and get elected for what you can do. Well, if you can, you know, I think the number one question the constituents always ask is, you know, Senator, what'd you do for us? What'd you do for me? And if the answer is back, well, I didn't do anything, guess what? They're probably going to be out of a job. But if you can list off 15, 16 different things that you've done, and some of those happen to be bringing back those tax dollars that you invested into your state, because, you know, if you're from Minnesota, you're sending tax dollars to D.C., just like you're sending tax dollars to North Dakota. If North Dakota ends up with all the money versus Minnesota or Iowa or even Florida, then, you know, those constituents kind of get a little upset at their senator.
Well, that makes sense. One of the things that's very interesting what you said, Jane, is that in some senator's mind, you know, even though, you know, Senator, you're up in Washington, you're helping to really craft the, you know, the state of the union, if you will, with the legislation. But for a lot of them, the view is going back home, being a governor, is even higher in the food chain.
Could be seen that way. But I think they all kind of enjoy representing. I don't know if they can get that public service out of their stomach. They got the passion for it. They want to do it. And once you become senator, you've been in D.C., going traveling back and forth to your home state. You know, they leave usually on Monday night to come back on Friday morning. I think maybe if you have the position of, you know, staying home, just representing your state as governor, maybe that can be kind of attractive instead of having to travel back and forth to the Capitol Hill.
That's true. Let me ask you, exactly. The book is Capitol Hill. How perfect is that? CapitolHillBook.com. You know, the other thing that's interesting is about the spending. You say they got a budget for staffing and all of that. Traveling back and forth, all that's paid by us U.S. taxpayers, right?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe so.
I mean, you know, you hear about, I guess it's the luxury stuff, the John Edwards haircuts and things like that people go, that's just crazy. But they do have special haircuts right there in D.C. for them, right?
I think there's a barbershop in the Capitol, actually. I don't think they can use their office fund. I might be wrong on this. I don't think they can use their office fund. I think they can use campaign dollars to pay for our haircut, though.
All right. Well, Jane Jones has been our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Please take a look at the book, Capitol Hill, CapitolHillBook.com. Jane, thank you very much.
Amazon and Barnes & Noble and at your favorite bookstore.
Outstanding. And please pass along our thank you to Alicia for her
contribution
to this book.
Great. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks for being on. Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.